Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Hey, what's up? This is Razor welcoming you to another episode of Zed Games. Joining me in the studio are my industrious co-hosts, Lee, Jody, and Candy. This week, we have a special guest joining us live. His name is Jeff Van Dyke, and he's a composer and sound designer, best known for scoring the Total War franchise. But he's an industry veteran who's worked on the early NHL, FIFA, and Need for Speed games too. We'll be chatting to him about his current project, Assault Android Cactus, and later on, Lee will be giving us the lowdown on Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2 for the PS3, 360, and PC. But first, let's get into this week's news.
This is Zed Games News, bringing you gaming news headlines from Australia and around the world.
Developers who have published games via Steam will soon be able to discount their own games. Features soon to be added to Steamworks will allow creators the ability to synchronise their discounts with store-wide sales or to schedule discounts for individual titles. There are some restrictions in place. The discounted price will apply for a maximum of 2 weeks and a game can only be on sale once every 2 months.
Razor, earlier you said that this was a game-changing event.
I just think as far as economics are concerned, I mean, we're going to see a lot more sales more often, and that's in turn going to get people to buy more games.
Jody, you buy games online.
Yeah, I already buy too many games online, so I'm slightly more cautious about how my wallet will cope with this.
Yeah.
But if it can be used to maybe get more indie games discounted rather than just the big ones that tend to make the front page of Steam, then that would be a good thing.
Yeah. As long as they can tie it into some means of, you know, drawing attention to their games, I think that's the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
King has withdrawn its trademark claim over the word candy in the US. The Candy Crush Saga developer was subject to scathing criticism after making moves to trademark the word, which included the filing of trademark disputes against the makers of Candy Swipe, a game that was released before Candy Crush, and the Banner Saga, a Viking-themed PC strategy game. The International Game Developers Association was one of the organisations that spoke out publicly against King, labelling their actions predatory. King continues to hold the trademark to the word candy in the EU.
Where does this leave you now with the fact that you are technically still known as Wilma Payne on this show?
Payne? I can't be Candy Payne.
No.
Oh, it leaves me a little up in the air.
You can be candy in the US,
yes.
But outside of the US.
Yes. I wonder if I could just spell it differently.
Mm.
Like candy with a K. I don't like that. Minecraft creator Notch has revealed that he is working with Warner Brothers to make a Minecraft film. This follows last month's news that a Kickstarter campaign based on the property was cancelled after it was revealed that the creator had not sought approval from Notch's company, Mojang. Warner Brothers are also the distributors of the recently released Lego Movie, another property that is based around blocks, which is currently enjoying worldwide box office success.
I don't know if you can really draw a line between the two. The Lego Movie has blocks in it, is popular, therefore a Minecraft movie, which will have blocks in it, will be popular.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty good strategy, I guess.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected that a movie about blocks would be so phenomenally successful, but here we are.
Well, I mean, the Lego Movie did get to include Batman, which, you know, brings with it a certain amount of box office success, regardless of quality. Is there a Minecraft mod that allows you to play as Batman?
No.
Okay. Not at all.
Yep. Then, so it's going to be like strictly inferior to the Lego Movie.
That's right. This movie is going to tank. No one will see it.
Amy Hennig, creative director and writer for the Uncharted series, has left Naughty Dog. As we go to air, Hennig has yet to issue a public statement, so the reasons for her departure are unclear. A statement by Sony said that this news would not impact the development of the upcoming Uncharted game for the PS4.
Yeah. That's too bad. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that in like
nice work.
Yeah,
right?
What a shame.
Yeah. No, I mean, this isn't the first big name we've seen leave the AAA game this year. Mm. As Candy said, we still don't know her reasons for leaving, so it's hard to speculate or draw any conclusions from that.
Well, yet. I mean, it's easy to speculate,
but
we just
really
shouldn't
easy.
Be drawing any conclusions.
Yeah.
With credibility.
I assume she's fleeing the law.
Yep. No.
And Lee, you have a couple of extra items that were just drawn to our attention later.
That's right. We reported this a couple of episodes ago, but now 16 days later, Twitch has not just played Pokemon, but they have played it to completion. They managed to defeat the Elite Four as well as your rival, which is surprising. They had apparently more than 36 million total views over the course of their whole streaming episode. For listeners who are unaware, someone came up with a way to allow chat commands from a streaming service to let people by aggregate play through Pokemon, the original game, online. Mm-hmm. And it was quite the sight to behold.
It was chaos.
It was chaos, yeah.
There were so many people in that chat window shouting at each other all at once. I had no idea what was going on most of the time.
There was a lot of angry people desperately trying to cut down a tree and failing.
Yeah, I'm surprised and kind of pleased that they actually did manage to coordinate enough to finish the game. But now they're moving on, right? They're going to play one of the later Pokemon games?
They're playing Pokemon Crystal, yeah.
Is that even harder?
I think it's even more complicated. Yeah. I don't think they're going to capture that same magic. I'm kind of sad that they decided that they would immediately move on to a new Pokemon. I was hoping something else, you know, just to bookmark this.
Right.
But I was... You know, when they got past the first gym leader, I thought that was impossible. And here we are 16 days later, and 9 million people who were playing at once apparently have proven me a fool. So that's the most number of people who have ever proven me a fool at once.
And there's just one last quick news article, Lee?
Yes, Rocksteady have announced that there is going to be a new Batman game in their Batman series. It is... Batman Arkham Knight.
Yep.
Jody, you're excited about this one.
I am, because I have been waiting for one of these games to add a Batmobile I can race around in for a while, and that is what this one is adding.
Yes.
A Batmobile.
Yep.
That's so exciting.
See, I want to race the Batmobile, but I don't.
But you're a terrible person.
No, it's not that. It's...
What's that going to do with
You're going to want to run people over, aren't you?
No, well, that's the... Like, it's fun to drive chaotically when you're in a big, crazy car. Like, because it's a big tank, mm-hmm. right? It's not that I don't necessarily want to, but it's going to be no fun driving that thing responsibly around the streets of Gotham.
It depends, you know, which iteration of the Batmobile is in the game or which it's going to be inspired by. I mean, you know, the most modern movies have it as a tank, you said, Lee.
I don't
but
want the tank.
I mean, there's also the Cadillac style one from the 60s. There's the 90s kind of aerodynamic,
with,
pointy
the fins and
with
stuff.
The pins and stuff. And my favorite one is the one from Batman Returns, in which Batman uses the flames of the Batmobile to ignite a clown who presumably dies off screen.
Yeah, Tim Burton's Batman had quite a kill list. Actually.
And that, listeners, is how Razor will be playing this game.
But I mean, that's the thing. Presumably, it's still going to be a Rocksteady game, so there'll be thugs walking around in the streets talking about, you know, how cold it is in Gotham.
And catching fire when the Batmobile goes past.
Well, it's going to be much easier to run them down than to get out and then get into a fight with them. I don't know how they're going to balance that, you know, with their other Batman play style. But again, it's easy to speculate. And we have no information. So Rocksteady have got a pretty good track record.
All right, well, that's it for the news. Next up, we'll be talking with Jeff Van Dyke. You're listening to Zed Games. Right now we have a special guest. His name is Jeff Van Dyke. He's a sound composer. He's done so many works that it would be a long list if I were to list them now.
List them now. One after the other.
Well, of course, I believe he's most well known for his work on the Total War series, but he's also done stuff with Need for Speed, Skitchen, one of my personal favorite games, as well as a few sports games like FIFA and NHL hockey. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What have been your favorite games to work on, do you think, over the years?
My favorite games to work on? Oh, that's a tough question right off the bat. Look, I guess the early ones were pretty amazing because working on games was new to me, you know. So I would say Skitchen was a lot of fun. It was one of the first games I worked on. And I guess back then, too, the technology was quite a bit different. It was quite challenging getting these old, you know, like the Mega Drive to sound good and... trying to make it sound the way normal music sounded, and it was always this massive challenge.
Yeah. So, as far as I understand, Skitchen has a kind of like a metal, '90s rock kind of thing, which was quite a technical accomplishment considering the limitations of the Mega Drive chip.
Yes, that's right. And I think, I mean, most games at the time were using the chip like a synth, you know, like a synthesizer, and it's like FM synthesis, and it's very electronic sounding. But the Mega Drive could play samples, but it could only play one sample at a time, and it couldn't shift the pitch of it. But the programmer at the time, his name was Kevin Pickell, figured out a way of changing that. He made it able to play four samples at once, including one of the channels could change pitch. And so I was able to sample guitar notes and play them on the keyboard and give Skitchen its unique sound.
Now, I have to confess, this is a game that was very dear to my heart. Me and my brother used to play it. For those of you who don't know, it's basically Road Rash on rollerblades. Mm-hmm. It was a race, and you could grab onto the backs of cars to propel yourself, but you could also punch out the other skaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And electrocute them.
You had
a cattle prod.
There was a warning at the start of this game that made sure you knew not to try this at home,
yes,
kids.
Yeah.
The music for that was totally instrumental, right?
Basically.
So how do you come up with names for purely instrumental music? Because the names for the songs off Skitchen, there's one called Smog Dog, Crunchy Bumpkin. What are some of the others?
My favorite is Silken Liver Slipper.
Were you just picking words out of a hat?
No. Some of the names are actually quite suggestive and are slang for different parts of us. That's as far as I'll go with that. But yeah, so it was just me having fun. To be honest, I was quite surprised they let me name the songs that, maybe they didn't look. I don't know.
Maybe they didn't know.
Yeah, they probably didn't know that we put a CD player in the game.
They do listen in to the show, though, so you know, you will probably get a letter from them.
Okay.
Do you mind if we talk about the Need for Speed games that you worked on? Which one of them?
Well, I worked on the first one, Need for Speed, and then Need for Speed 2 as well.
The original back in, when was that?
to remember the year exactly, I think it's probably got to be 96 or 95 or something like
Champagne
that.
Champagne Radio Ray.
Yeah.
So you were working on game audio during that transition from the early music like we heard through to CD quality music.
That was awesome. That was awesome because what happened is, you know, a lot of us were sort of standard musicians working in town, and we'd been hired to work on games, and we're given this Mega Drive, and we're like scratching our heads trying to make this thing sound right. But then we were given CD technology, and we could actually go back into the studio and do what we were better at, which was produce music in a studio. And so we sort of enabled us. It sort of just opened all the limits, really.
So did you just go nuts?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I just went absolutely nuts, and we just recorded all sorts of heavy industrial electronic music, and now it goes into world music and orchestral music, and, you know, there's some pretty amazing music out there, and the technology is out of the way, and in some cases, the technology enhances it now, because you can make interactive music that's dynamic to what you're doing in the game, and that's adding another challenge again, because now we have to make the music work in an interactive way and make it so that when it changes, it changes in a musical way or in a smooth way, which can be tricky.
Need for Speed 2 was one of those games that had adaptive music, right?
It did,
As you move through the pack, the music gets more intense.
That's right, yeah. And I've reused that scheme a few times on different games. But that would have been one of the first ones to do a sort of interactive score.
Right.
I think basically what we did is we mixed the song down at three intensities by basically just reducing the number of instruments playing. And so if you were back in the pack, maybe you didn't hear guitars and things
like
that.
You're not good enough.
That's right. That's right. But if you get out to first place, the guitar solo kicks in and it's like, it feels really good. So
now this leads me to my next question, which is about the Total War games. How do you get into the mindset where you're orchestrating the backdrop to an like the most epic battles of all time? How do you get into that mood where you're composing that music?
I suppose it's fairly practical. I put the game on the screen and watch it play it like a gamer, I suppose. I put my mindset. I like playing games, so, you know, I'm a bit of a gamer myself. So I play the game, but I also have the keyboard there, and I'll just reach over and start bashing away on the keys while the game's playing, and until I go, yeah, this feels like it's supporting the moment. I mean, there's also, you know, watching relevant movies of a similar style. Like for Shogun, it was Ran was the movie that we saw, or that we watched for inspiration, and for Rome it was Gladiator.
How finished is the game when you're working on the score for it? Like, are you brought in quite late in the process normally?
Most times, no. Most times I'm involved from the beginning. And also, I like being very involved with the game and not just doing the music, but being involved with putting the music in and directing the audio of the whole game. That's something I just like to do. So generally, I'm involved very early on in the game, doing things like helping with sound effects and all that sort of stuff. But also, I take advantage of that because I get to see the game from the beginning and ask for tech that I could use for music down the track. And yeah, so generally, I think on average, I'm given the game about a year before it's done.
So were you doing things like Foley on the Total War games? Were you making the sound effects?
Yeah.
Did you ever put yourself into the game? So that,
yeah, yeah. I mean,
did I kill you?
yeah, definitely. There's a few games where I've actually done death screams, and when you hear somebody die, that's my voice in there. So
Every part of me wants to ask you to do that on air right now. I just don't know how that would work.
I'd kill the mic, I think. Yeah. And for Shogun, I had to get, like, what is it, the sound of a geisha's sort of shuffling feet, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I had to, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I had to put on my wife's shoes to to
walk your hands and across the desk.
yeah, my feet wouldn't fit in it, so, and yeah, do that, but yeah, anything for a good sound, I suppose.
As a gamer yourself, have you ever been playing something and just thought, they have completely cocked up the soundtrack to this? Are there things where you really wish that you could have been able to, you know, have a hand in that?
Yeah, I have. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I don't want to trash any other games,
no.
But yeah, I have been in that. And the thing that I find the most prevalent is when games don't put themselves in the gamer's perspective as far as what they need from an audio perspective. Something as simple as you pause the game, it should go quiet. It should be like muting the game, because, you know, phone rings, pause. You don't want to have to pause the game and then also find the volume control. And you know
yes,
what I mean?
So I have that all the time.
It's those little things. Yeah. It's silly little things, but you know what? Those little things, when you do them right, they make the whole game feel really solid and polished.
You were telling us a funny story about why that your tracks are so short.
Yeah. We were discussing the music, and we got a list of music, and they said, how much was it going to cost? And I told them my rate per minute, and they just, and I said, so how many minutes do you want each song? Oh, just 1 minute, thanks. So, yeah, they just didn't want to, they didn't want to explore the concept of longer songs at the time.
I see.
Yeah.
So that was back when you were a freelancer, I guess.
Yeah, and I am again now too.
Right. Mm. But you're also you're a partner in
yes.
in Witchbeam Studios.
That's right.
So how is that different?
Well, I guess with Witchbeam, because we're an indie, it's it feels like, you know, being independent and I mean freelance. Sorry. Certainly it's different from working for the large developers full-time, purely from the amount, the 9-to-5 time commitment. And I mean, actually, to be honest, as an indie, I think we're putting in same number of hours, but I suppose the benefit of doing it as an indie is that we reap all the benefits of what we do, and we pour our soul into this thing. And, probably more so than if we were working for somebody else, maybe, you know. Because we have everything to gain and also everything to lose, too. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that's probably part of the difference.
Do you charge per minute?
Yes, I do.
When you started working with Witchbeam, I heard that you pulled out of another project. You were working on Alien Isolation at
yes,
some point?
I was, yeah. Yep.
How much work did you do on Alien Isolation? Will we hear you in the finished game?
Oh, There's going to be parts of me will be in there.
Are we going to hear your scream?
No, I don't think so. No, initially I was writing music for it. I was also the audio director on it. And it was pretty interesting to work on that game. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Alien world and the movie. Certainly the first movie I'm a huge fan of. This game's definitely going to do it justice, you know, because I know there's been a lot of different Alien games that have gone in different directions and, you know, sort of look like the world of Alien, but kind of always sort of missed the point to me. But I think this game's going to do it. But yeah, for me, the problem was actually logistics. It was hard for me to work remotely because the studio's in England, in London, and so I had to just basically stay up all night so I could be online with them. And I was also trying to do stuff during the day, and it was just too much work. And also, you know, sort of juggling up the thing of working with Witchbeam on something that I own or own part of versus working, like I've been working with Sega for years and they own everything I've done up to that point, which is why actually there's no soundtracks of my stuff because it's not up to me to release them. It's up to them. It was a difficult decision to leave it because I know it's a big AAA title and, you know, it's going to be, you know, very impressive and all that. But, you know, it's also a lot of stress. And, you know, I don't mind taking it a little bit easier these days, having done a ton of AAA games and having various amounts of success with that. And I know what that's like. Indie is new for me, so I'm enjoying it.
So now that you're working with Witchbeam, which is a studio of only a few people, do you feel
three.
Like three people? Yeah. Do you feel more creatively free now,
or is
it like when you were working on the AAA titles? I imagine that would have been a lot of feedback from the higher ups.
Yes, and it is very free. But that said, you know, Tim and Nart, my business partners, you know, they're quite willing to tell me when something's not sounding right. You know, as they should to them, because, I mean, they're very possessive of the game and the sound has to tie in with everything that they're thinking as well, you know. But that said, also, they haven't knocked back any of my music yet, and they're liking what I've been doing, and I really like what they're doing to the game, and we're all really enjoying the process. But, I've got a lot of creative freedom, and I have a bunch of musical projects going on at the moment that are all slightly different from each other, and so from a creative point of view, I'm actually really in a really good space at the moment.
The game you're working on now, Assault Android Cactus, it's a very fast-paced and sort of action-heavy game.
Yes.
Does that bring a different kind of challenge to it?
Musically?
Yeah.
Well, there's a challenge. I suppose the challenge I'm finding is just trying to make sure that I come up with something that matches the action and that people like it and think it's cool, you know, because I don't want to, you know, I want to do a good job on this. And I suppose that's my own, I'm at adding pressure to myself, you know, because of that. It's fun writing the music for it. And we do a similar thing to what we did back in Need for Speed, actually, which is where I mix three versions of the game and have it at different intensities. And then depending on sort of your kill rate in the game, the music intensifies. So if you don't keep pushing through, the music will actually settle down and feel a little less intense. But then when you go around and you're just kicking ass, the music really cranks up and it feels really good. It's a really fun way to compose, actually.
It's interesting. The video game music is like a non-linear composition. How do you begin and end the tracks when, you know, there might not be a clear end or beginning in the game to the music?
Yeah, right. Well, I guess that's where the whole interactive music thing comes in, and you create in and out points and in and out cues that will work at any moment, and then within the technology, the software we've got, we can tell it to change at the right moment, and as long as I've written something that ties in with the rest of the song, it'll sound like it ends. You know?
Okay, so there's like a sort of a background clock that syncs the music up.
Well, it's constantly watching what you're doing and reacting to it. So if you, I mean, quite simply, you finish the level, it's going to transition to the level complete music, which, you know what I mean? And then, and so but it's just always monitoring what you're doing. That's the key thing. And not all games do that. And most of them probably should.
Hello and welcome back to Zed Games. We just heard a song called Gamma from the soundtrack to Assault Android Cactus. We have the composer of that music in the studio with us, Jeff Van Dyke, and we've been talking about his career in audio composition for video games. And we were just talking about the very first FIFA game, which was one of the...
The second one. FIFA 95.
Right.
Yep.
One of a whole bunch of sports games you worked on for EA back in the day. And you told us that you were responsible for my favorite feature in that game, which was that when you scored a goal, you could annoy the person you were playing with by holding down a button or just mashing any button on the controller and getting various goal celebration sound effects.
That's right.
Was that a hard sell when you came up with that idea?
No, I was having a shower and then... the idea just came to me, and I actually had to convince them to put it in initially. I thought it would be great because especially playing with your buddy, to score, and then you could hold the button down, you'd hear fireworks, or another button would be a horn, air horn, or the other one was this sound of a South American guy going, "Goal!" They say it forever, right? And so we even looped the word "goal," like just the O part of the word "goal." So it would just loop for as long as you held the button down. So, in the end, I think they kept it in. And I think they even redid it for a few versions after that. I don't know if they still do it in the modern day. But
I think the longevity of the series is actually based on that function.
Yeah, they've waited 20 years to hear that Jody. That was Jody's number one favorite feature. Well done, man. Good sell, Jeff.
Awesome. Jeff, it has been a real pleasure having you in the studio today. Unfortunately, we're out of time, so we'll have to say goodbye. But Assault Android Cactus is available now for the PC on Steam.
Yes.
It's coming to the PS4 and the PS Vita later this year.
Yes, and the Wii U as well.
Yes.
Cool.
Oh, fantastic. Jeff, once again, thanks so much for joining us on Zed Games.
Thank you very much.
No worries. We're going to hear one last track of yours, though. It's from, again, Shogun.
Yep.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about this one?
This is, I believe it's the win song, When You Win a Battle.
Big thanks to Jeff Van Dyke for joining us in the studio today. Now, we're going to go right into a review of Castlevania.
Yes, Castlevania Lords of Shadows.
Tell us all about it, Lee.
I will. It is out right now on the Xbox 360, the PS3, and the PC. I've been playing it on the PS3. It's a sequel to the previous Castlevania Lords of Shadow game, which was kind of set as something of a prequel and a reimagining of the old Castlevania games. This one follows on from that, where your character from that, and I think I can give a spoiler warning considering I mentioned the plot to this two episodes ago as well. You are now Dracula, you awake in the modern day in your Transylvanian castle, which is still just there in modern Transylvania town. And Patrick Stewart, as the spirit of death, takes you to his corporate headquarters and asks you to re-kill Satan to avoid the apocalypse. Now, that is the plot that I wish every video game had, up to and including FIFA 95. Because that is the greatest plot that has ever been conceived. And they kind of dropped the ball on it. The previous Castlevania game reimagined Castlevania instead of being a game about exploration and puzzles as being a more of a God of War style of brawler. And it was quite successful. It had fun combat, it had really interesting creature design, and it had this magnificent architecture that you got to experience. And this one, you can tell, has been a troubled production because all of the things that were great about that game have been kind of watered down and are just floating in this sea of mediocrity. You're supposed to be Dracula, but they say that you are Dracula at his weakest, but at no point do you ever really feel like, you don't ever feel particularly powerful. You don't feel like you have a skill set that is any different from the one that you had in the previous games. You don't really do anything particularly Dracula-like. You can suck blood out of people a bit as a quick time event after you have whipped them to death with your blood whip.
Right. What's a blood whip?
It's a whip because the Castlevania games are about whipping skeletons to death. But the Trevor Belmont, no, not Trevor, Gabriel Belmont got rid of his actual cross whip, I guess because it hurts to hold it now that he's a Dracula. And so he just has a whip made out of his own blood, which seems very wasteful. If you are a Dracula and blood is the only thing that you need to survive, you shouldn't just go flinging it around as a weapon. And I think that's why he's so sick. So you've got that, and you've got a sword that restores your health a bit when you use that, and you've got some gloves that are made of fire that break shields. And the combat feels a bit more watered down, a little bit looser than the previous one. It feels like there's some interesting ideas in there, but they couldn't balance them right. I think any time they give you a weapon that heals you a bit, you know that they don't know how much damage they should be doing to you, so they just go, look, just keep healing. We're sorry.
That means you don't need to drink blood, right? If you can get your health back by hitting someone.
It's much more efficient to hit them with the void sword than to suck blood to gain health.
That's not fun.
I know, you're Dracula.
You play Dracula.
Yeah, that's you should be drinking
it's
blood.
The teeth into the neck bit. That's what you're after.
Yeah.
I thought.
I mean, that would be like the first thing you would suggest, right? In your Dracula game where you're Dracula.
Yes.
Yeah. So the other major disappointment is that in the previous game, it was set in, pseudo-gothic medieval times. So there were these big castles and weird locations, and it was all wonderful and over-the-top and magical cathedrals. This is set in the modern era, so you spend a lot of time inside a pharmaceutical company's lab where they make monsters and gas, or a sewer. And if you've ever played a video game, you've probably visited enough sewers forever. And so I felt like, I didn't really get enough opportunity to swing my big blood whip or be a Dracula whilst I was just walking through sewers punching monsters. So
how much fighting is going on when you're hanging out in the pharmacy?
A lot. Actually, but not as much as you would like, which leads into the third thing that is kind of a misfire here, where they've added a stealth element. And if your game is not primarily a stealth game, you probably shouldn't just tack one in because you don't know how to make stealth games. I'm just going to guess. And in this case, they have just put in this really awkward stealth game where, rather than being rewarded for being creative with the tools that they give you, there's exactly one solution to getting past these things, and if you don't do that, you will die immediately. And it's another like strange thing where there was just not enough communication between the team, because you are Dracula and you punch out gods in this. Like there's a bit where the Gorgon triplets form into a giant massive lizard with like writhing snakes for a head, and it's enormous, and you beat the hell out of it, you punch its eyes out, but prior to that and then preceding it, you are not strong enough to overcome a dude with a machine gun because he's got big shoulder pad armor. So the stealth sequences always have you fighting these like, or sneaking past these kind of Warhammer knockoff dudes that Dracula, the strongest being in the world, who has to kill Satan, he can't overcome them under any circumstances. And it doesn't make sense in the context of the game that they've created for you. And it's never fun, Like initially you turn into rats, not just a rat, but like rats.
What?
when you're doing the stealth stuff, and that seems like a great idea, just being rats.
That was fun in Dishonored when
you
could be a rat.
Yeah. But again, you don't have any choice as to whether you be a rat or you send some bats out. You have to do you have to solve the puzzle the way they want it, and it's not particularly clever or interesting. It's just there as padding. It was because someone said, "Hey, wouldn't it be great if, since Dracula's weak, you have to sneak a bit?" But
also, doesn't Dracula turn into a bat?
No, not in this game. No, he can.
I feel like they just read the brief for this and somebody stuffed up the B with the R and made rats instead of bats. I'm pretty sure Dracula is bat related.
A printer's error may have led to this stealth thing. Yeah, you send bats. You shoot bats at dudes in the stealth sequence.
Oh, of course. And when you're a rat.
No, before you turn into a rat.
You're not a rat who shoots bats.
Yeah, no. That would be a great game.
That
sounds okay to me.
Someone should make that game, the bat shooting rat. No,
that's a sequel.
Yes. So the stealth is really wonky. And then they've also added in these platforming segments, and it's that platforming in the style of Uncharted, where you just jump from glowing object to glowing object, except the glowing in this case is a swarm of bats, so you jump towards other bats. So...
there has been way too much in this review for me to follow. Does it feel like there is too much crammed into this game?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
Not just me then.
That's the thing. Like, no part of this is particularly polished. It seems like, you know, they had a lot of ideas, but they also weren't allowed to point out which ideas were terrible. So, you know, you've got multiple economies that you have to juggle. You've got experience leveling up each of your combat maneuvers, but none of them are particularly satisfying, and you don't unlock anything particularly new. It just seems like there was so much cool stuff in here and they made none of it good, you know? And it's so disappointing because clearly, you know, there was a lot of passion involved in this and there was just not enough direction tying it together. That's Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2.
Yep, you can get that for the PC, PS3, and 360 currently.
That's right, yes.
Thank you very much for that review, Lee. And that will bring us to the close of this week's edition of Zed Games. As usual, thank you very much for listening. Big thanks again to our special guest, Jeff Van Dyke. Next week on the show, we have a couple of big reviews. Jody.
Yes, I will be telling you all about Thief, the new reboot of the series.
And Candy, you have a review for us as well?
Yes, Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare.
Awesome.
It's fun.
In the meantime, you can catch our podcast, which is on the internet. Zgamesau.net is the blog. Type in Zgames into iTunes somewhere and you should be able to find something related to our show.
Yeah.
With luck. We're also on Facebook and Twitter.
Thanks for listening. This has been Zed Games, recorded live in Brisbane on 4ZZZ and heard nationally thanks to the Community Radio Network. For more information on the show and to join the Zed Games community, head to our website, zgamesau.net. That's spelt Z-E-D, or send us an email at contact@zgamesau.net. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Zed Games is produced with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation.